Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci, your health and wellness resource, where you get the whole scoop and nothing but the scoop.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Whole Scoop. As she said, we are a health and wellness radio show where our guests are always highly credentialed in their fields, and the goal of this program is to present different and sometimes opposite perspectives to allow you, the listener, to make informed decisions about the right health approach for you. I am your host, Carol Ferraci, a registered licensed dietitian practicing for over 30 years, and the founder of Naturally Nutrition. You can find me at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. So, as I said, it's important for me to provide you highly qualified guests. Tonight's show is Autoimmunity, Diseases and Causes. It's a fabulous show tonight. I'm going to give you the good old reminder that while our guests are highly credentialed on the topics of discussion, it's always recommended to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on this program. The number to call in is 347-855-8894. You can also direct questions and comments to our Facebook Blog Talk Radio group page. Please check out that page and feel free to ask us questions, do whatever, give us show ideas. Our last guest was gracious enough to give us the Whole Scoop listeners a free webinar that's coming up on May 9th. So check that out because you'll need the code for the Whole Scoop group. We also have a new website, thewholescoopradio.com, where you'll find more information on our guests, more information on our shows. And we're going to start a blog, too, and get you some more information on where we are going and what's happening. And I'm trying to elaborate on some of the shows that we have because sometimes we just don't have enough time, and I think tonight's going to be one of those. Number to call in is 347-855-8894. We will take questions later on in the show, and at that time I'll call out the last four digits of your telephone number. If you are calling with a question, please remember to press the number 1 in order to become part of the queue for questions. So all that business out of the way, tonight's show, as I said, is Autoimmunity, Diseases and Causes. We have a wonderful guest with us tonight. His name is Dr. Christopher Bump. He is first and foremost a healer of the whole individual, offering a truly holistic approach to medicine, concerned with not only eliminating symptoms, but also creating a total health and well-being plan for each patient. His goal, to touch the lives of people and make them better, has led Dr. Bump on an interesting journey, resulting in his practice of today of functional medicine with a twist. He was accepted into the Harvard of Chiropractic Schools, Palmer College. Christopher Bump studied with a mission, earning the distinct honor of being the clinic intern director, which is a full scholarship position overseeing other doctors in the school's health clinic, and graduating at the top of his class in 1982. Most recently, Dr. Bump has already earned his master's degree in human nutrition from Columbia University. You will find him at drbump.com. With that being said, I'm going to bring him on, and I'm going to tell you before we start, I'm getting over some kind of crap here, so if you catch me coughing, that would be why. Dr. Bump.
Yes. Good evening, Carol, and thank you for that introduction. Boy, I didn't remember some of those things. They were so long ago, it seems, but thank you for that. Yes.
Well, you know, that intro only scratches the surface for who you actually are. You are, I know you to be a fabulous educator, a fabulous practitioner, and I think that intro just kind of scratches the surface for you. So thank you for being here tonight, and I'm looking forward to what we're about to talk about. We're talking about autoimmunity tonight.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me on. Yes, it's my pleasure.
So when we're talking about autoimmunity, maybe we should just give a slight overview of what that is, what it means. I'm sure people have heard it, but maybe they have their own impressions of what it might be.
Sure. I think that's a perfect place to start in that You know, there's a lot of attention, a lot of interest in autoimmunity recently in the past number of years, and for good reason. Before I go into some statistics and all, but let me just give you my definition, and it's really when we lose the ability to distinguish ourselves from non-selves or friend from foe. In other words, we have within us both innate and adaptive immunity, and something happens to us where we immerse in something that causes our immune system to lose the ability to distinguish who we are. From a medical perspective, we use the expression the loss of self-tolerance. And then further, autoimmunity would be defined as an immune response that against an organ, a gland, or tissue. And then finally, just any disease that results, like Hashimoto's or celiac disease or MS. These are all disease processes of loss of tolerance.
So,
Go ahead.
That's pretty broad.
It is.
I guess I never really thought about it in those perspectives before, but that encompasses a whole lot of things, and you just mentioned three big ones. Do you want to kind of elaborate a little bit?
Sure, I do. Well, first, I think it's important to give a little bit of understanding of our immune system at large, and then we can talk about what might provoke it to kind of lose its ability to identify self from non-self. And so what is amazing to me is that we're born with this innate immune system. And these are in white blood cells that we're born with that actually have memory that I say go back probably 3 million years. It's a memory that knows that this virus or this bacteria or this certain food protein does not really contribute to your well-being. So when, say, a particular virus like Epstein-Barr virus comes into the body, our innate immune system already knows that it doesn't belong there. It then mounts a major reaction to that, what is called an antigen, and then communicates that new knowledge or that old knowledge to what we call the adaptive immunity. And the adaptive immunity is made primarily of lymphocytes. And then each lymphocyte is given a particular job to do. And that job is either going to be to stimulate lots of inflammation and pulls lots of big eaters, which are called macrophages, into, say, an infection site. And they're also going to, the innate will teach lymphocytes to produce antibodies. So the B lymphocytes will produce antibodies, and the antibodies are then produced in reaction to a particular antigen. I don't want to spend too much time on that because they have a lot to go through, but to give our audience an example of forced adaptive immunity, we would think of vaccinations. Vaccinations are artificially injecting us with a attenuated bug of some sort, and that is supposed to, in a sense, teach our adaptive immune system that this is not something we want in our body, and then every time we come into, say, typhoid, we are able to mount an immune response to that and eliminate it.
So when we're talking about this kind of reaction in the body, are we saying that our body kind of takes over and kind of does its own thing, or are we saying that it's a controlled situation that with distinct symptoms or distinct issues that may occur?
Well, it gets a little confusing, but I'll try to keep it simple. When we go into an autoimmune reaction, And I say we lose our ability to distinguish self from non-self. There's a number of different known mechanisms that trigger our primarily our adaptive immune system into doing this. And one of the most, I would say, the best known mechanism that describes this is something called molecular mimicry, whereby, and this is a process where these T cells that I was speaking to earlier, and even some of our innate cells, they lose the ability to distinguish a particular protein like casein from our cartilage out on our shoulder, or say the protein in our thyroid. And so our adaptive immunity starts to look at our own proteins, like a thyroglobulin protein that's used to carry our thyroid hormones. It begins to look at this protein as if it's something that doesn't belong in the body, because it has a similar pattern that looks kind of like this casein protein. I hope I'm making that clear enough, but if I could show you on a drawing, you would see a repeat pattern of amino acids that are associated with the protein of casein. I mean, I was saying gluten in wheat, but it could happen with casein. Casein is the protein in dairy. So our immune system would see this repeat pattern of amino acids. And then if it sees something similar to that pattern on a healthy body protein like thyroglobulin, then it can't tell the difference. And so your immune system will either stimulate all this major inflammatory cascade, the stimulation of what are called cytokines, which are major inflammatory molecules, or it will stimulate the production of antibodies. And usually both.
So how does one, okay, let's kind of break this down even further. Let's take something that's real common that most people have heard about probably, and that would be, let's say Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And let's just talk about that for a minute. If I'm understanding you correctly, then it is an autoimmune response, meaning that the body is seeing the thyroid cells as kind of foreign bodies or foreign invaders, and it's trying to attack those. And it can't tell the difference between the good cells versus the bad cells. Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly right. Pretty much. What I wanted to make sure I clarified is that something like, see, as in most health conditions, I don't care what we speak about, they just don't occur in a vacuum. There's always has to be these antecedents, something that precedes the breakdown of our immune system, where it becomes what I call hypervigilant. And so what I used here, Carol, is an example of both gluten, the protein in wheat, rye and barley, and the protein casein, which is in dairy. These proteins in many individuals, I maintain many more than we estimate, these proteins cause the immune system to react. Then,
okay.
If the immune system, like the T cells or the lymphocytes, begin seeing a similar-looking protein somewhere else in the body, it will also react to that. And that's so you have, like in Hashimoto's, you have two different proteins that are implicated in Hashimoto's. One is called thyroglobulin, and it's the protein that carries the T4 and T3 hormones around through the body. And then the second protein is called thyroid peroxidase, which is an enzyme that helps in the utilization and formation of these thyroid hormones. So what happens in Hashimoto's is the T lymphocytes, both B and T cells, are reacting to the thyroid proteins, the thyroglobulin and thyroid peroxidase, because it's been charged up, say, by gluten or casein. And there's another factor in here that I'd like to explain. There's recently been a tremendous amount of excitement about the relation between Hashimoto's, for instance, and autoimmune per se, and leaky gut and gastrointestinal imbalances, dysbiosis. And that is a very, very strong correlation. But if we only look at leaky gut and dysbiosis or gut-related disorders as it relates to autoimmunity, we are short-sighting ourselves, because there are numerous other antecedents that trigger autoimmune reaction. And one of the most profound in my clinical experience, and this is going back 30 some odd years, are the herpes class viruses, especially Epstein-Barr virus. That's the virus that causes mono. And I see this all the time, Carol, as patients come in, they've been diagnosed with hypothyroid. Usually they're not diagnosed with Hashimoto's yet. And then we go about doing a workup and diagnosing them. But then to discover the antecedent, okay, so what's causing this? What triggered this over time? And very often it is gut dysbiosis and gut imbalances. But yeah, I would say easily in 75, if not higher percentage of patients that I see with Hashimoto's, they have positive Epstein-Barr IgG antibodies, and or they have a history of mono. And I know you want to ask me another question, but I could keep going on this, but I better stop, otherwise I'll be speaking for 45.
No, that's okay. what I was thinking is that it really does – I want people to understand that it's not simple, and you're doing a fabulous job in that, in that it's not simple, and that there are so many maybe extenuating factors that may have played a role years before something actually surfaces to become an actual diagnosis. And
well,
so
absolutely. There's to feed off of that comment, Carol, oh my gosh, there are studies that show in certain groups of individuals that developed autoimmunity that like 80% of them had some kind of traumatic stress event at least 2 years prior. And what that means is that, oh, we have this major stress response in our life that alters our immunity, and then sometime down the road, as you suggest, we may develop hypervigilance in our immunity, which we translate as autoimmunity. Yeah, and so stress is an antecedent, a huge one. But there's one of my current culture heroes, who's a researcher, Trevor Marshall. And he's a fascinating expert on the vitamin D receptor. And he has been looking at electronic smog and its relation to the vitamin D receptor and the onset of autoimmunity, and especially like MS, and finding very strong correlation. And just so we can put this in perspective, what I'm speaking to with electronic smog, I'm speaking about our cell phones and Wi-Fi, which we're all subject to pretty much 24/7 anymore.
Right. So there's so many things to ask about this. I'm laughing because I don't even I'm usually not at a loss for questions or words, and I'm really not now. It's just that my brain is going in many, many different directions. So let's kind of go ahead. It is kind of break it down a little bit with you were going to say.
So yeah, let me expand on the Hashimoto thing for a little bit, and then I'll broaden the discussion out a little further and look at other environmental things. So if we look at research around autoimmunity, and we're anyone who's renowned around autoimmunity, there's a triad of events that will take place. One is there's a potential, and mind you how I said that, there's a potential genetic predisposition. So those with, say, HLA, DQ2, and 8 may have a potential for developing celiac, or someone with HLA B27 may have a potential for developing uveitis or ankylosing spondylitis. So there's this tendency for genetic predisposition. And then there's going to always be some type of environmental trigger. Now, I just mentioned two of them. I mentioned a virus, and I mentioned gut dysbiosis. I also mentioned leaky gut, and I make a distinction between dysbiosis and leaky gut. So dysbiosis would be an environmental trigger, as would an infection. So that's the second branch of this triad for developing autoimmunity. And then there's the immune regulation itself. So the health and quality of the immune system, coupled with genetics, coupled with the environmental antecedent or trigger, is what leads to autoimmunity. So how that applies to Hashimoto thyroiditis is that someone may have developed a sensitivity. No, let me go this way. Someone may have used antibiotics as a child for, say, ear infections or strep throat. And they used them all through their early years, and no one thought to rehabilitate their GI tract. And they cruise through their teens and their 20s, and then they get married, and they have a child, and they have increased stresses. And then all of a sudden, they may develop a sense that, hey, you know, my gut is really off. It's called irritable bowel syndrome. So they go to the doctors and they develop this, loose stool, constipation, gassy bloat. And over time, there's this slow cascade of changes that take place within that person's health. They lose energy, they start gaining weight, they're not sleeping well, they have aches and pains, and on and on and on. So an astute physician may say, well, let's take a look at the gastrointestinal tract and see if there's some underlying or underpinning issue there. And they discover that the flora in the gut are out of balance, and they discover that the epithelial lining of the intestines is leaking. So those would become two primary antecedents that might trigger the immune system that then causes it to lose its recognition of friend from foe. So something that is typically tolerated, like, say, a gluten protein or casein protein, now, because of the heightened inflammation in the gut from, say, life changes, leads to the immune system reacting to the thyroid hormones. So that's a specific kind of 1+1=3 equation.
Wow.
We can trace that one very well, Carol. That one's well documented in the medical literature, as is the Epstein-Barr virus, the monovirus, the herpes class virus. It's also known as human herpesvirus 4. There's a tremendous body of literature around the same thing that would happen with this virus. So the virus, someone who's had mononucleosis would have this virus circulating, and you might have been told that if you're infected with this virus, you built up immunity, and then it goes latent, which means kind of dormant. And I say to my patients, if you were a virus that had a 3 million year track record of of finding the perfect host called a human being, and you infected that human, would you go dormant? And I don't think they do. In fact, I know they don't. But anyway, they cause the B cells to react, producing a tremendous amount of antibodies to these viruses, cause the thyroid proteins have a similar repeat pattern as the viruses on their outer surface. The immune system ends up not being able to tell the difference. And so those are two environmental factors. And then I mentioned e-smog, which is microwave. But there's, and Carol, I can cite at least 20 other environmental triggers that have been researched around being antecedents for autoimmunity. So it's huge. I guess the point I want to make is that
it's
not
much like people living their lives and they run into a bump in the road and they don't even realize that a few years down the road they may be paying the price for what they're experiencing today. And so at that point, then when and how, why, all of these things in terms of how do we teach people to recognize that what happens today needs to be dealt with so that tomorrow you're not faced with something that, like we're talking about? Is it possible? There are so many...
Yes.
There are many extenuating circumstances here that I don't even know if that's even feasible.
Well, it is. I'm just gonna cite some of the factors that are implicated as environmental triggers that are beyond these three that I've cited. They include not just viruses, they include parasites and bacterium, they include food additives, they include glyphosate, think Roundup, ultraviolet light, air pollution, stress I mentioned, different drugs, silica, nanoparticles, hormones, heavy metals, nutrient excesses and weaknesses, deficiencies. So you're getting the idea that you could say, oh my God, we need to live in a bubble, because everywhere we go, I mean, there's cosmetics, there's skincare things, all of the, and everything that I'm mentioning has been studied. It's in the medical literature. This is not just, fear mongering from Dr. Bump. It's real stuff. So here's what I would, to answer your question, how do we go about looking at this? And look, the increase in autoimmunity in our culture and world is astounding. I won't even go through the statistics because it's just absolutely mind-boggling. I remember about 10, 12 years ago, one of my mentors and friends, Jeff Bland, mentioned that when he was teaching that, autoimmunity is going to be the next major thing that we need to be concerned about, because it's starting to escalate in ways way beyond our previous knowledge or estimation. So what I say about autoimmunity, Carol, is that, okay, for what is it really, if you step back away from it and you go, well, it's your immune system saying, I don't really know who I am. I can't tell who I am. So our immune system loses the ability to really appreciate and know self. So from what I call spiritual emotional perspective, autoimmunity is a disease or a process, because I don't like to use the word disease. It's a process where we lose connection with ourselves, so much so we can't identify ourselves, and then we end up attacking our very self because we don't know who we are. Now, take that concept and apply it out in our society and culture at large. And first off, we say, well, let's use the last 15, 16 months as an example. It has been such an amazingly difficult, stressful time politically that we, and it doesn't matter if you're green, yellow, blue, or red, it doesn't matter. You've been stressed out to the max for the past 15 months. What does that do to, you know, that high drive of adrenaline and then high drive of cortisol adaptation? What does that do to our physiological response on a day in and day out basis? It sends us into hyperdrive. It sends us into hypervigilance. It sends us into, oh my God, you know, what is this environment that we're living in? And so that's how I would suggest we begin thinking about, okay, well, what is autoimmunity then? And then how would we address it, you know, in terms of therapeutics? But we're not there in our discussion. I know you have a lot of questions. And Carol, and I apologize. You just, you know, get me going on a tangent here.
No, actually, I'm kind of absorbing all of this, and I'm thinking to myself, so now I have a pretty good idea of the things that we're talking about. I have a pretty well-versed background on a lot of this. But if I'm the average person sitting here listening to this, and this is what I usually mm-hmm. do on this show, I usually try to put myself in the seat of the listener that may not have the similar background. And I'm saying to myself, okay, I hear you, and I'm listening, and I'm going, but I can't, there's no way that I can live in a bubble, which you just described as impossible to do, and I am influenced by all the extenuating environmental factors, including the food additives and the air pollution and everything else that you've mentioned, and not to mention the whole political environment, and wherever you stand on that, it doesn't really, you're right, it doesn't really matter from what party you're affiliated or which party you're affiliated. It just matters because it impacts everything that we do. So all of that being said, all of that in perspective, we have a booming, overwhelming sense of autoimmune responses, and everyone is reacting differently. So what mm-hmm. are some of the things that maybe somebody can do to try to just maybe calm their own systems down to a point where maybe they can start to get a handle on what's that? Because I think what I'm hearing from you, and correct me if I'm wrong, please, but what I'm hearing is that not only are all these things happening and that we're all exposed to all of these things, we're in overdrive ourselves as a society and as a people. And so we don't have time to stop and really think about what might be happening. We just, if we're sick, we take a pill, we go to the doctor, we take a pill, we get better. If we get hurt, we have surgery, we get better. That's what we're so used to doing. But what we're talking about is that we don't really get better. We just put it on hold, and then later on it comes back and it says, hey, by the way, that traumatic event that you had, well, now you got to deal with this as a direct result of that. So how do we get people to really become aware so that they can then start to recognize that they got to be nicer to their bodies? How do we do that?
Oh, boy. How many hours do we have, Carol, tonight?
Well, the good news is, you know, we haven't even announced, but we're going to do a couple of other shows soon.
Oh,
so, you know, we may not get done tonight, but we certainly scratch the surface.
So it's a wonderful question, and it's like, it's the core of what we all need and desire in our health care. We want to be able to be loved and nurtured. And if we can't find family members and physicians to help do that, we have to do it ourselves. Actually, I maintain we all of our healing must start within ourselves in the first place. So and there, you know, I always throw these studies out. There's studies that say this, that it's kind of like there's an app for this. Yeah, there's a study that demonstrates clearly, numerous of them, that mind-body activities, meditation, prayer, concepting, quiet time, exercise, all are absolutely essential to the quieting down of the immune system. One of my colleagues, Terry Walls, who has been doing fabulous work with multiple sclerosis, she has what she calls her Walls Protocol. And it's a very, it's conceptually, Carol, very simple. But one of the basic legs of her protocol is meditation. And she has found, and she's an MD researcher out in Iowa, and so she's doing clinical trials looking at these four primary variables in MS. And one of them is mindfulness, meditation. Be quiet. Be quiet. Be still. Feel. I guess the opposite of being still is being reactive. And I think this is what most of us do. I know with my patients, this is, they come into me and they're just reacting, emotionally reacting, mentally reacting, physically just reacting. And they're not stepping back and saying, okay, how do I take a breath? Am I breathing properly? What do I, you know, I ask patients all the time, what do you do for recreating? What do you do to vacate? So meaning like, well, what do you do to vacate your usual routine? What do you do to for recreation? And these are all really important, absolutely essential parts of what all of us can do is have prayer time, meditation time, gentle relaxation time. So that's a huge and the major, and everyone can do that. So if you turn the stress response down, the immune system strengthens. And to remind you that the primary medical intervention for autoimmunity are immune suppressing meds like prednisone, right? So that would be number one. Would you like me to keep going?
Yeah, actually, you know, we've done a lot on this show as it relates to the holistic approach to many, many things. And we did at one point do a guided meditation, and we talked about why
wonderful.
Meditation.
And
we did, we have done some just energy healing and mm-hmm. what it means to actually be a part of being able to be aware of what's happening with you and then clearing. Mm-hmm. So all the things that I'm hearing from you is about empowering ourselves to be in tune with what is actually happening with us and recognizing it so we can deal with it. I think it's fabulous, and it falls right in line with some of the things, many of the things that we talked about on this program. So yeah, if you want to keep going, we'll keep exploring it.
Sure. Well, there's an interesting study about exercise, and this is something that I want our listening audience to get. When I say quiet exercise, I am not talking about getting on the bike and pumping out 25 miles at warp speed or training for a triathlon. This is not what we're thinking. Though exercise is absolutely essential, there's a study that demonstrates, and I love this, that it was a group of triathletes, both male and female, and they evaluated their gut after racing. Both in male and female populations, their guts were leaking. In fact, they were so inflamed that their guts had increased permeability. The point being,
I'm going to stop you right there for just a second and say, you know what, let's get really basic here and let's just define leaky gut so that people understand what we're talking about, okay?
Excellent. Yeah. So when we use that expression leaky gut, it's synonymous with intestinal permeability. So what it means is the lining of the intestines, which is estimated to be about the size of a doubles tennis court. It's huge. That lines our mouth down to our anus. That membrane is comprised of a single epithelial lining. And the cells along that lining have to hold together like a tight chain. And if anything causes that chain to break, where the cells kind of split apart, that is what we will call leaky gut. And when the cells do split apart, it will allow for the seepage or leakage, if you will, of content that is in the intestinal lumen that's flowing by. These could be proteins that aren't digested. They could be different pathogens or parts of cells. Anything that is not, there are many things that don't belong down inside the body can now pass through these cells into the lymph tissue and trigger immune response. So that's what we would call leaky gut.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Before you go any further, I'm just going to, I need to do a quick reminder that what people were listening to, so give me 1 second and
we'll
come right back.
You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci, your health and wellness resource, where you get the whole scoop and nothing but the scoop.
And thanks for joining us. We are talking with Dr. Christopher Bump tonight. We're talking about autoimmune responses, diseases, and causes. And Dr. Bump is... Well, he's just fabulous, and we're listening to him, and there's so much to talk about. But you can find him at www.drbump.com. I'm Carol Ferraci, your host. You can find me at naturallynutritioninc.com, and you can find us on Facebook, The Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio Group, with our new and our new website, thewholescoopradio.com. So, all that being said, Dr. Bump, let's continue a little bit and. We're running short on time, but you know, I think I'm really not surprised. So let's just try to wrap this part up. We do have some blog questions. Maybe we'll take a couple of those and we'll see where we are and go from there. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I want to emphasize for our listening audience some therapeutics that they can engage in that are really, in my opinion, the foundation of an approach to any autoimmune condition, no matter what. If you have leaky guts and imbalanced flora, that has to be treated and put back into balance separately. But broader and away from that, for everyone, including those with gut dysbiosis, there are two different dietary diets, if you will, that have been shown to be extremely beneficial for autoimmunity. And one is the Paleolithic diet, and the other is intermittent fasting or a lower calorie diet. And I'll explain both of these. The Paleolithic diet, as many may know, is an effort to get back to the roots of what genetically humans grew up with. It's assumed that those from European ancestry had access to much clean protein, much vegetable and seasonal fruits, but not a whole lot of else. Grains were not part of our ancestry, and legumes and beans not so much, nor dairy, and fruit was just local and very, very seasonal. So the Paleolithic orientation, by and large, and there are variations on this, but is primarily vegetables and proteins, fats, and maybe a touch of fruit here and there, but those that would grow in your local area. So the Paleolithic diet, what I think it does is it removes an immunological burden on our both our innate and adaptive immunity. So the foods involved in the Paleolithic orientation we're familiar with. We've grown up with, so to speak, genetically. Our complement and our innate immune system knows what protein is. It knows what vegetables are. And so these are well accepted and in a sense removes a major burden on our immune system when we're eating grains and other foods. So that's number one. And number two, there's a big movement in research in calorie restriction diets. It was spearheaded many years ago by Richard Weinreich out at the University of Wisconsin, and now following up with by a researcher out in California, Walter Longo. And there's two ways to do this. You just reduce your caloric load by 20-25%. That reduces metabolic burden. But Longo's work has demonstrated that intermittent fasting, that is 3-4 days a week, fasting from 6 p.m. to 8 a.m., has a tremendous a positive effect on reducing oxidative stress and inflammation. And those two components of physiology, oxidative stress and inflammation, are part of the hallmark of an immunological reaction. So those are the two dietary things that I would suggest, especially the Paleolithic orientation.
So are you suggesting that the intermittent fasting actually kind of functions as a reset, if you will, for the body and the immune system?
I would say it's more, Carol, like it's giving the alimentary canal and metabolic pathways a break. I can just, for 14 hours, I can just relax and quiet down. Yeah.
And I don't have to do anything, and I don't have to process anything. I don't have to make sure that I get these antigens out. Yeah, okay.
You got it.
That makes sense.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fabulous. Are you suggesting that the intermittent fasting along with the paleo, they be done simultaneously or one versus the
other? No, I would suggest doing them both. Doing them both, applying them at the shore, absolutely. So we, you know, by reducing the burden, the metabolic burden or the caloric burden, it basically gives our whole body a chance to just, as you say, kind of reset. I think of it more as quieting and calming, relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Are you up for a blog question?
Please.
Okay, and remember, I'm going to remind everybody, if you want to ask a question live, you can press the number 1 to get in the queue. If you don't and you're just listening, you're kind of just taking it all in, that's okay too. We've got a whole lot more to talk about that we're going to announce later. So anyway, here's a blog question. It says, my T3 and my T4 are normal, but I'm tired all the time. My weight is higher than normal. My temperature fluctuates. My mom had thyroid issues. I have been checked. Everything's normal. Should I be looking for something else? With the thyroid?
It's a wonderful question, and one that really touches on the problem with allopathic medicine. So unfortunately, this questionnaire has not been tested properly to see if there are other issues that might explain the weight gain and fatigue. So what I would suggest for this individual is to make sure that they have thyroglobulin antibodies tested, and they're called thyroid peroxidase enzymes, or it's TPO, antibodies tested. So those would be two very important thyroid indicators for Hashimoto's. So when they're elevated, it would indicate thyroid problems. Now, we can get into a whole discussion around thyroid per se. Like I would suggest also having RT3 or reverse T3 done, and in truth, having free T3 and free T4 done along with your TSH. So what I just said there is the preferred thyroid panel would be TSH, free T4, free T3, reverse T3, and then the thyroglobulin antibodies and thyroperoxidase antibodies. That's a real good panel. Then, in addition to that, I would suggest having Epstein-Barr virus IgG tested. I would also test cytomegalovirus. It's also known as CMV. Same thing, IgG. And thirdly, having human herpesvirus 6 or HHV6 tested, also with IgG. What the IgG stands for is immunoglobulin G. They're measuring the B cell antibody against these viruses. It's for chronic exposure to these viruses, both Epstein-Barr and HHV6. I see it all of the time. So without getting into greater detail, that would be a really good start for you.
Wow. So I'm going to do a follow-up question to that one then. I got a two-part question. When people are hearing the human herpes virus, they may be freaking a little bit. So Should they be freaking? Because it has a connotation that has a kind of a societal stigma, if you will. So can we kind of allay their fears on that one?
Yeah, you know what would probably be a very good thing to do in the ensuing months, Carol, is to do a show just on the capsid viruses, on the herpes class viruses. They're that huge. But to assuage any fears, statistics say that 95% of adults carry these viruses. And the stigma that you refer to is really just human herpes virus 2, which is genital herpes. And it's estimated 25 to 30% of our adult population carries that virus. There's a lot of, in my opinion, much medical misinformation about the complications and influences of these viruses. So, and one of them is in autoimmunity. And so if I pose this question to medical researchers is if these viruses go latent, then how is it that they are so intimately involved as an antecedent for so many different autoimmune conditions, from rheumatoid arthritis to MS to Hashimoto's and to Sjogren's and on? So, but it's beyond the scope of tonight for me to describe what happens with these viruses, in my opinion, how they affect us metabolically. But one of the most profound ways is low energy fatigue, and then the second is immunological issues.
Okay, well, I think we need to do a show on those viruses. I think we need to talk about.
I do too. I absolutely.
Yeah,
do.
I think. Luckily, you're coming back and. And we're gonna do two more parts to this or something similar, and I think we just found what our second show will be, and I'll announce when that's gonna be in just a few minutes here.
Good.
But I think that for our blogger here, you've just given some really fascinating information. And so don't get discouraged. Just know that there are tests out there, and if you were taking notes, those are good things to ask your doc about. But I'm going to do there's a couple of other questions, and I think you've touched on it. One is I've been diagnosed with MS. Is there any hope? And I think that we can talk about that on the next show, but maybe you can just kind of give a real quick
I will. For anyone who has MS, the diagnosis of MS, it's mandatory. And it's mandatory that they pick up Dr. Terry Walls' book called The Walls Protocol. And she will go through a step step-by-step approach, and it involves a Paleolithic diet, exercise and stretching, the use of essential fats, mind-body, and the use of neuromuscular electric stim, or what she calls E-stim. And this is a protocol that that she has used because she had MS herself. She was wheelchair-bound in 2007. By 2008, a year later, she was riding her bike to and fro. Dr. Terry Walls, and that's spelled W-A-H-L-S.
Okay. W-A-H-L-S, Terry, and that's T-E-R-R-I?
T-E-R-R-Y, and it's just okay. The Walls Protocol. She has a website and a fabulous book out.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, and there's another one here.
By the way, Carol, to the question there is immense hope, absolutely incredible hope.
Great. She went on, I'm assuming, yeah, she goes on and she says, I'm 32, female with a four-year-old. So I think you just helped her out a lot. So good. And we will talk about that in a little more detail on our next show with you.
Yes.
Okay, I'm gonna skip. There's one here that's about chronic pain in the legs. No one can find anything wrong with me. How can I get diagnosed? Well, so there's that. And then the other question that we have is, how do we get MDs to pay attention to us? I've had issues with my stomach for years.
Lord.
Now,
well,
we don't have enough time for that. But
no. But what I will say is this: I facilitate and teach for the Institute of Functional Medicine, and I would suggest to anyone who's looking for a well-trained physician, at least in the start of it or somewhere along the continuum of functional medicine, is to go to the IFM, the Institute for Functional Medicine, type in, find a practitioner where you are and start looking for physicians that have taken the initiative to change their paradigm. And you'll do much better that way. You know, the Cleveland Clinic now has a 6-month waiting list in their newly appointed Center for Functional Medicine, which is being managed by the IFM. So that's where I would suggest starting.
The IFM has a fabulous reputation, and they really have some fabulous practitioners attached. So that
yeah.
is a great
Absolutely.
Yeah. But let's just we've got like a couple of minutes left. Let's just all intents and purposes, why don't we try to just say what functional medicine is in a minute and a half?
Here's my elevator speech, Carol. So I would say functional medicine is that medicine that really helps the patient to discover the causation of what has led to the imbalances that they are calling diseases or illness. So functional medicine seeks to establish the antecedents, what happened in someone's life, what did they do, what happened to them, what did they pick up, and what has that effect been on the beautiful synergistic interrelation of all the organs, glands, and systems within the body that had pushed it out of proper function. And if we can define that, then we have tools that are usually natural-based, nutraceuticals, food, and lifestyle-based that can help individuals push back into balance. That was pretty good, Carol.
That was really – I'm impressed. I am really impressed that you got all of that in such a short period of time. Wow. And
yes.
You know what you just did? You just went full circle for where we started this conversation to how we ended it, and it couldn't have been done any better. Thank you so much.
Sure, Carol.
On
my
that,
pleasure. Thank you.
I need to tell everybody you're coming back because I know we're going to get a lot of questions and we're going to get a lot of you know, what about? And the show is in the archives as well, will be in the archives. So I know people will be accessing that. So you're coming back May 25th, right?
Yes, that's
May
25th,
exactly
right.
You'll be back. We will talk about some of these autoimmune systems or issues,
right?
Because you don't like to
right.
use
we
the
can
word
get more
disease.
Specific. We'll get more specific.
Yeah, we'll do more specifics, and so get your questions ready. And then we're just honored that you're going to be back again in June too. So we're really trying to cover this whole thing because it's huge. It's just huge, and I can't thank you enough. I'm going to tell everybody that before you come back, we're going to have Kathleen Levy back. She's an acupuncturist, and she is going to be talking about scalp acupuncture and the reasons to use it for brain injuries like stroke and dementia and cerebral palsy. So we'll be talking about that, and we can probably wrap some of that into our next conversation as well, Dr. Bump, don't you think?
I think so. Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us. Those of you that are listening by phone, thank you for staying with us and absorbing all this. And I promise the next time that we talk, we'll get into a little more specifics and we'll just keep going with this. So everybody, thank you for listening. Thank you for blogging in. Thank you for being a part of the whole scoop. And we'll be seeing you again in 2 weeks. With Kathleen, and then again in 4 weeks with Dr. Bump. So, Dr. Bump, thank you. All right.
Thank you.
And good night, everybody. We'll see you again.
Good night.